This week on the Federalist Radio Hour. Like, there was this premise, and it was, I think, in some ways correct. But that was predicated on this idea that there were essential sort of sex differences. And now we're actually even...
Subscribe to The Federalist on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Visit my website, www.sarahacarter.com. That's sarahacarter.com for my latest reporting and stories. And while you're there, be sure to subscribe to my email list so that we can stay in touch. Today, I am joined by the managing director of the Coalition for Jewish Values, Rabbi Yaakov Menken. And I am telling you, you're not going to want to miss this. He talks everything from the growing rise of anti-Semitism and crime in New York City. His latest piece, a phenomenal, phenomenal opinion piece called The Gray Lady's Yellow Journalism, focuses on a big piece in the New York Times that targeted the Hasidic schools in New York City and his response to them. So we're going to be discussing that and how this has major implications for educational freedom across the United States. We will also talk about anti-Semitism in America, like I said, Palestinian violence in Israel, the Iran nuclear deal. It's going to be a great show. Before I get to that, I want to remind everyone that AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens, is a sponsor of the Sarah Carter Show and a phenomenal, phenomenal partner for us. Because why? They fight for you. They fight for the American people, and they fight for the principles that our nation was founded on. By joining AMAC, you're taking the first steps in saving the America that you love. AMAC offers an alternative to just about every other benefit that that other group offers. But guess what? No liberal agenda. I stand with AMAC, and I hope that you will too. I encourage you to join today at amac.us/Carter. That's amac.us/Carter. Listen to this. The benefits of membership are great, but the cause is even greater. So join today at amac.us/Carter. Don't forget Carter. Folks, let me start off before we get to the rabbi. And I'm going to tell you, you know, this is a great moment for all of us, right? Because we want to be listening to everybody. And we're in a time in our nation where, honestly, I feel like our country is upside down. And I am reaching out to spiritual leaders, to people who are bringing a message that I believe is solid, one that we can hold on to, that will give us what we need, the strength that we will need to fight back. That's why I have the rabbi on the show. I had David Limbaugh and his beautiful daughter, Kristen Limbaugh, on the show talking about their new book. I want to bring in different, diverse, great Americans who all stand for the same thing. We're all standing for liberty and freedom and the American dream and how to retain that American dream. We do not want that American dream to walk away. We don't want to lose it. We don't want to allow the left and radical leftists to do that, to take away what we believe, to take away what we have fought for since the beginning of this nation. And okay, we've got to get better at it. We have got to make amends. We have got to figure out how to retain it and how not to lose it. But we can only do that if we're together, right? If we're working together, not apart, not apart. That's the fastest way to lose this nation. And our adversaries know that, right? Right now, there are 22 members of Congress. They are pressing Merrick Garland for answers on the arrest of a pro-life Catholic activist, Mark Hoke. I think we need to take a minute to think about what's going on here. We have seen the extent of which our federal agencies have become vested in targeting conservatives, not only, you know, those that they say are, you know, fighting for their parental rights in the public schools, those that who stand up to these radicalized school boards, or who stand up to what we believe is a radical idea of what, you know, these pro-abortionists are standing for, because I say pro-abortionists, it's like they're, it's not like it was before. It's like there are people out there actually celebrating their abortion with cakes, right? And celebrating abortion and wanting to abort children even after they're born. We're going to talk to the rabbi about that. But this is a pro-life Catholic activist, Mark Hoke. At the moment, it appears to be an extraordinary overreach for political ends, the congressional members wrote. This is from Fox News, foxnews.com. It's fantastic. I'm a contributor at Fox News, and I think the stories there are phenomenal. Listen to this. 22 members of Congress demanded answers from Attorney General Merrick Garland on Tuesday regarding the recent FBI arrest of a Catholic pro-life activist. As you know, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which has targeted, by the way, anybody who stands up to the government now as a domestic terrorist, or anybody who believes in freedom or who says they're a patriot, I feel like all of a sudden our phone lines are going to be tapped because they're going to say we're terrorists, right? This is just the absolute insanity. Or anybody who supported President Donald Trump because he wanted to make America great again and put America first? Terrorists. I don't want to say this about the FBI, but it appears that the Bureau from the top especially has been corrupted and politicized. And that's very dangerous. When these are armed agents, we entrust these agents with our own national security and our lives. These are armed agents of the law using our taxpayer dollars, right? So listen to this. Is once again in the headlines, the FBI is following another raid of an American citizen, this time of Mark Hoke, a father of seven, a noted Catholic and pro-life activist. The FBI arrested Hoke, 48, on Friday in front of his wife and seven children at his rural, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but Kintnersville home in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. The pro-life father, who often protects and protests peacefully outside abortion clinics, is co-founder and president of the Kingsmen, a Catholic ministry that aims to spiritually mentor young Catholic men. The arrest reportedly stemmed from an altercation he had with a Planned Parenthood escort in Philadelphia in October 2021, when he was accused of pushing a 72-year-old man outside the clinic after the escort allegedly verbally harassed him and harassed his 12-year-old son. This is Hoke's 12-year-old son. The letter noted how Hoke's wife, Ryan Marie, described the arrest to the Catholic News Agency as a team of roughly 25 federal agents with, think about this, 25 federal agents with guns drawn in 15 vehicles pounding down this man's door and allegedly threatening to break it down. My congressman, Chip Roy, who I absolutely think is phenomenal, Texas Congressman Chip Roy, he spearheaded this letter. He told Fox News Digital that the Attorney General Merrick Garland oversees an increasingly politicized FBI. You think? I mean, do you really need 25 federal agents, 15 vehicles targeting this man's home with his family? Really? Because he doesn't believe in abortion? What? Because he was accused of pushing a 72-year-old man. By the way, I know some 72-year-old men that, you know, I know a sheriff out here in Texas who's 72. Anybody, and he looks fantastic, looks great, feels great, isn't old and frail. But anybody harassing my child and calling my child names, I would have done probably the exact same thing. 72 or 25, doesn't matter. I probably would have done the same thing. What's going on at the Department of Justice, folks? What's going on at the Department of Justice when they surround Roger Stone's home with an armada of FBI vehicles, people with guns, you know, wielding weapons, threatening to slam a door in? They have boats in the back of, you know, Roger Stone's house. Remember that? Or remember the very public arrest of Paul Manafort? or what's happened in Loudoun County schools where the FBI, I mean, we had memos. It showed that they wanted to call them domestic terrorists. And by the way, that is still an issue. That is a huge issue. And right now, DHS is allocating money to a leftist group to study video games that they think may be white supremacist leaning. I mean, this is just absolute insanity. While we have adversaries right here in the Western Hemisphere, like China, like Russia, others, targeting the United States, targeting our assets overseas, we literally have a war of the government against its own people. I don't want to say that, but that's exactly what it is appearing to be. And what do we do? I mean, we're just sitting here waiting, what, for the FBI to come knocking on our door? We're just waiting to be targeted. 87,000 IRS agents out there ready, being trained to do what? To do what? To go after small business owners? To go after the American dream? We have unions, our school unions especially, brainwashing our children. Our kids learning more about, you know, whether or not they want to be a man, a woman, a cat, or a dog. What is transgenderism? All of this insanity in our school systems. They can't even feel proud that they're American. They can't even feel proud to look up to the flag that so many of our forefathers spilled blood for, to represent this great nation. That's what the flag is. It represents this great nation. Instead, we have the FBI targeting this Catholic man for his belief. We see an ever-encroaching bureau, FBI, our intelligence agencies, our Department of Injustice, because I can't see. Our lady has taken off her blindfold. She has taken off her blindfold. The Justice Department is now in control of, and I believe for a long time, the left, the radical left, whatever you want to call it. We're in a time in our country where we're really facing a lot of challenges. And this is the reason why I believe it's important that we call it out, that we call out Merrick Garland for weaponizing, and we call out others that were at the Department of Justice for weaponizing the system against our nation. And now we see how far it's going. This is not just about President Trump, folks. Remember, people would say, oh, it's just about Trump. They're just investigating what they heard. And then we found out it was all lies, that it was based all on lies, evidence that was not real, manufactured evidence, and that the system was being weaponized. People would say, well, it's just about Trump. No, it's not. It's about, first it was about Trump, then it's about the people around Trump, then it's about the people that worked for Trump, then it's about the American people who voted for Trump. And then it's about the people that don't agree with what the left is doing in this country. And they are using a system that should be honored and respected, and by the way, treated with all the respect in the world because of how potentially dangerous it could be if it's utilized against its own people. And that's the FBI and our intelligence agencies, and more importantly, our Department of Justice. We are at a time, folks, where we've got to make some very big decisions. We have to get out there and vote. We have to stand up for what is right. We have to do what is right. Because if we don't, we will lose our nation. We will lose this country the way we know it. Our children and our grandchildren will lose it too. And that is unacceptable, and we should not allow that to happen. And sorry if this is exhausting and you think like, I've been at work all week. How can I do this? How am I expected to get involved in my local elections? How am I expected to get involved in the PTA? How am I expected to know all this, Sarah? How am I expected to know all this? And I would say, you know what? I know how you feel, but this is what we've got to do. This is what we were called to do. This is why, this is our fight, right? For those of us who didn't fight the battles overseas or pick up the weapons, our fight is here at home. Our fight is to protect our country and to protect our children. And before I get to the rabbi, I want to talk to you a little bit about another great American patriot, Mike Lindell. And Mike Lindell, as you know, has a great sale of the year on the MyPillow PerCal bed sheets. Yes, you've heard this before. MyPillow PerCal bed sheets, queen size, regular price, $89.98. Right now, you're going to get them for $39.98. You cannot beat that for the full sheet set, right? And you only have to use the promo code Carter. Regularly $89.98, now $39.98 with the promo code Carter. Go to MyPillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221 for deep discounts on the MyPillow PerCal bed sheets. Queen size regular $89.98, on sale now for $39.98. And while you're there, take advantage of the buy one, get one free sale on my pillows, towels, and so much more, like the dog beds. Visit MyPillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221 today for the sale of the year on MyPillow PerCal bed sheets. MyPillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221. And the director of the Coalition for Jewish Values, Rabbi Yaakov Menken, joins me now. I'm so grateful to have you on the Sarah Carter Show, Rabbi Yaakov Menken, because as soon as I saw your article, and I'm just going to jump right into it, and then we're going to talk about so many other things that are happening in our nation, and I'd like you to address some of those as a rabbi, you know, the spiritual side of things. But your opinion piece, The Gray Lady's Yellow Journalism, is just, and I told you, it was like right out of the ballpark. For all of you out there who are listening to this, The Gray Lady is in reference to the New York Times. And a piece that was written in the New York Times critiquing Hasidic schools. And the rabbi came out in full force with many others, mind you, in the defense of Hasidic schools, Hasidic religious schools. So thank you so much, Rabbi, for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so let's start out with The Gray Lady's Yellow Journalism. Tell everyone who's listening right now, what went through your mind when you read the story from the New York Times that basically criticized the Hasidic schools, but it was also written by a Jewish author. Well, somebody who considers themselves
a Jewish author.
Yeah, a pair of Jewish authors. What went through your mind when you read that? And I mean, were you astonished? Did you take a step back? Why do you think they did it?
There was actually a kind of warning sent out to some of the school administrators, et cetera, by the New York Times, saying, we're going to publish this piece, and here's what it's going to say. And before they'd even published, they got a kind of a warning letter from a group called the Tzedek Association, who you may have heard of because they helped very much during the Trump administration to pass the bipartisan First Step Act to get people to reconsider, those who were nonviolent offenders and give people a second chance. That group, that organization is run by a Jewish philanthropist who said, we really need to have a conversation about this before you publish. Of course, they didn't have that conversation. They just went ahead and published. And it was every bit as atrocious as people kind of had come to expect. It takes numerous facts completely out of context, deliberately distorts the context. And of course, you know, because they're a pair of Jewish writers, well, how can you possibly call it anti-Semitic? Well, the answer is you open the Talmud, and the Talmud tells you that the hatred of those who are ignorant in Judaism of the scholars of Judaism can be worse than the hatred of anti-Semites for Jews. So this was, this piece trafficked in anti-Semitic tropes like anything you would expect.
And part of that, too, was this overt accusation that these failing private schools were flush with money and that money is being mishandled. And, you know, the fact that they didn't even give an opportunity for response before publication the way that they should have, that's got to be astonishing as well. But we've seen this before in the New York Times. This is nothing new.
The New York Times is anything but in favor of parental rights in education, generally speaking.
Right.
And this was an opportunity for them to explore it with a particular minority community that educates their children in a very different way than that of the American public school system. Which most people would look at the American public school system right now and say, this is not a model. This is not something we should be emulating. The fact that somebody else is doing something very different, let's at least look at the work product before we go into, you know, how well this system is working. So here's one thing to know. The first belief of the anti-Semite is that all Jewish property is somehow stolen. It's why economic boycotts are the first tactic, the first reprisal. Let's take away the money from the Jews. The Jews don't deserve whatever money they're getting. And so here it is. They're flush with public money because they're getting $1 billion over 4 years. Now, their study, they claim, went on for 2 years. Where is this four-year number for? Well, the answer is very simple. $250 million a year doesn't sound like a whole lot. Especially when you consider the number of students in these schools are saving the public till over $3 billion every year. So they're saving
more than
10 times as much money as they are receiving. And they claim that that's called being flush with public funds. That's ridiculous to go and flush with public money. You know what that money went for? It went for COVID relief, which everybody got. It went for school buses, which if you don't do school buses for every kid in New York, you're going to have dead kids in the street. You would think the New York Times would be in favor of not having dead kids. But in this case, the kids are Hasidic Jews, so maybe we'll do a pass on that one. But the next one's even worse. The New York Times openly celebrated the school lunch, the federal school lunch program that gives a free school lunch to every child in every school, including the Hasidic schools. Only when that money goes for lunch in a Hasidic school, all of a sudden something is wrong with that money. All of a sudden it means the school is flush with public funds. When none of that funding or even the pittance of that funding ends up going to any sort of educational need, which is, of course, things like remedial education and textbooks and things like that for the secular studies they claim that the kids are not getting.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you. So what you're saying is that with the budgeting, the way that these authors looked at how the Hasidic schools were getting their money and dispersing their money was kind of, it was manipulative, the way that they portrayed it in their article. They also have in the article, they said they reviewed thousands of pages of public school records, translated dozens of Yiddish language documents, and I'm reading this from their story, and interviewed more than 275 people, including current and former students, teachers, and regulators as well. The review provided a rare look inside a group of schools that is keeping some 50,000 boys from learning a broad array of secular subjects. What do they mean by that? Is this where you're going back to, where they're saying, look, well, they don't have a choice in this. They should be learning exactly what our failing public school systems are doing. I mean, they should be in the same exact, you know, punch bowl as them.
Well, first,
is that what these writers are saying?
First of all, they claim to have done all these interviews. I didn't see in that article a single interview with a satisfied parent. Are they claiming that they can't find a satisfied yeshiva school parent in New York? The New York system, the regents received hundreds of thousands of letters. They've never had this volume of public comment on any issue before. And on this issue, they had over 200,000 letters from yeshiva parents who said, don't change the rules. The overwhelming majority of those letters were against this sort of intervention by government to change the way the yeshivas do education. The New York Times couldn't find one of those people. They had to interview a non-custodial parent who's a malcontent. What about the wife who's putting the kids into these, the ex-wife, obviously, who's putting the kids in these schools? What about the other members of that person's family? What about the other members of that person's community? Why is everybody else happy and why is everybody else not getting quoted in the New York Times? It's obvious that they only cherry-picked who they wanted to speak to and what narrative they wanted to gain. Because if you actually look at yeshiva graduates, yeshiva alumni fill their homes with books and not flat-screen TVs. So don't tell me these kids are not interested in education. They're interested in taking education with them when they graduate. They are not hanging out on street corners. They are not doing drugs. They are not participating in smash and grab robberies. You know, you compare them to the public school graduates, and there's nothing to talk about. They bring up corporal punishment from decades ago, as if it happened in the Hasidic schools. Go look at the stats right now of public school teachers in New York State being arrested for corporal punishment and for beating students and for throwing students against a wall, etc. All the things that they claimed were happening in the Hasidic schools, they lauded up about 12 incidents. And then you look at what's going on in the public school system, and it's like even a school or a school system, a small system that only had 12 incidents over that period of time would be called outperforming, doing great. But they simply cherry-picked the facts that they wanted you to hear and portrayed it in the most negative light possible.
Well, and let's talk about that, because when we think about school choice, and this is just not an issue that I think the Jewish community is dealing with, and Jewish families, Christian families, Catholic families, people who may want their children in a school outside of the public school system, maybe a gifted, or that there's no real school choice in America. And you can see that with the frustration among families in Loudoun County, where they had to stand up to the school board and say, what's going on in our public schools? Why are you teaching this critical race theory? Or what kind of book is this? You know, this over-sexualized book for a child that's only in the second grade or third grade or fourth grade. I mean, we don't want that. Do you feel that those that I'm, and I, well, I would just, I don't want to say radical leftists or Marxists, or maybe I am, or those that do not appreciate like a religious upbringing, maybe that they're trying to target religious schools and religious education. And I think that includes the New York Times.
I think that it's a symptom of a profoundly dangerous problem that you are right. It affects all Americans, and certainly every American parent, and certainly every American religious parent, regardless of which religion and what values you think a child should be learning. It's interesting because all of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Martin Luther King said that a kid is going to school to learn to think critically, which doesn't mean critical race theory. It means critical thought, the actual discernment between sets of facts and understanding trends and learning how to think. And the other thing that a student should be learning in school is character and moral development, according to all of them. And the schools today are teaching everything but character and moral development. First, they claimed we're not allowed to teach Christian values or anything like that, or biblical values in whatever sense. And then instead, they teach their own values, which turn out to be that all types of marriages are equal to a biblical marriage, and all types of gender options, that the people are gender fluid and a child can choose their gender. And now it's to the point in the public school system where a child can choose to be a different gender, and the school will hide this information from the parents. Talk about opposition, open opposition to parental rights. And instead of dealing with these real problems and the crises, and of course, New York City's systems, especially after COVID, are in a complete shambles. The kids did not get an education for upwards of a year, possibly 2 years. That's how far behind they are. And instead, they decided this is the time we're going to tell yeshiva parents don't know anything about education. They don't know anything about what their kids want. They don't know what their kids need. We're going to take decision-making away from religious school parents, because this is the one place where, obviously, when the parents are shelling out up to $10,000 or more dollars a year to send their kids to a particular school, they are very invested in choosing the right school for the right child. And they're all, by the way, in our community, there's all sorts of parent-child learning programs that I never experienced because I grew up outside this system. I didn't have that experience myself with my parents, but you know, learning with your kids and being involved in their education, every stage of the game, this is the one where they're saying something is wrong. That really sends a really interesting message about what school boards are really about today.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. You brought up some really important points that I think a lot of us, because time's gone by, we are dealing with so many issues now on a global scale, on a national scale, inflation, economy, everything else. But during COVID, I mean, the children, for the most part, were literally left abandoned. I would be in Virginia. I remember this when they shut down the schools, and I would go to pass food out in some of the more poverty-stricken communities. We'd be taking, you know, food donations to families, and I would see the kids on the street. You know, I would say to them, and you know, most of them were Spanish-speaking communities, and I speak Spanish, and I would say to them, you know, where's your mom and dad? Aren't you supposed to be home studying? Aren't you supposed to be doing homeschool? And they laughed at me. They were like, no, nobody, I'm not doing anything. And I would think to myself, well, this is the public school system that is completely unraveling before our eyes, and parents who have no money, you know, who couldn't be home with their kids, who had to go work outside of the house, and nobody watching the children. And now we've seen an increase in crime in New York like we have never seen in a long time. Thank God Lee Zeldin is running for office. I mean, I know it's going to be a tough race, but, you know, somebody has to call something out. And we've also seen, Rabbi, an increase in growing anti-Semitic violence in the city and across the country. And now we have the New York Times once again, you know, doing a story like this, calling out, you know, good people. I don't see the Hasidic community coming out and, you know, tearing apart everybody around them. You know, the Hasidic community is working to, I would think, better their children, better their community, better their lives, add to the state, add to our world, to our culture, to their own culture. This is really dangerous territory, isn't it?
You know, very much so. When you look at that community, it's like, you know, they're not the ones who are a drag on the police force. They're not the reason why New York City needs such a large and well-armed police department. On the contrary, you know, policemen are very much welcomed in that community and very much appreciated for the work that they do, because everybody there is interested in public safety and maintaining order. And meanwhile, you had the long arm of government, again, you know, the demonization. When everybody else was out of school, the yeshivas were finding clandestine ways to reopen when they realized that the regulations were ridiculous and offensive. And what did Cuomo do? He went on a war. They went on an offensive that now they've actually realized, like, the testimony when Cuomo's misconduct was being investigated, they actually had a talk with the top epidemiologist in New York, and she said, we didn't understand what was coming out of the governor's mansion, because you had neighborhoods that were meeting the metrics and they were not being declared red zones, and yet other neighborhoods that did not meet the metrics and they were being called red zones. Well, guess where the red zones just happened to be? They were drawn around Orthodox neighborhoods. Cuomo wanted to appear to be doing something, so he scapegoated the Jews, and everybody thought this was okay. And they went in and shut down the schools. And by the way, the mortality in the Hasidic community from COVID is no worse than anybody else's. The whole thing was nonsense stupidity, closing the schools like they did in New York. And you see that from states like Texas and Florida, where they did not close down the schools for nearly as long.
Correct.
And they don't have any worse problems. You kept kids from visiting their grandparents for a while if you were worried the kid might have a COVID infection. But you didn't shut down the classroom, because you know what the mortality was for kids from COVID? It was nothing. It was nothing. You were more likely to get sick and die from a common cold, if you're a child, than you were from COVID. So why were classrooms being closed down for that period of time? The answer is, by the way, the teachers' unions. They were more interested in the teachers and the system than in what was best for the kids. The private schools in general and the yeshivas in particular, they were interested in the kids and the kids getting an education, and that's why they reopened classrooms.
And you're absolutely right, Rabbi. And those teachers' unions are still doing it. They are still pushing. And by the way, anti-Semitic actions in New York City are on the rise. We saw that. I think it was New York City's commissioner made a special trip to Brooklyn, and I think that was just this August, if I'm correct, to kind of speak to families and warn them in Williamsburg. Am I right?
Williamsburg, it's a family Borough neighborhood Park, out there. All the Orthodox Crown Heights, Borough all Park. The Orthodox neighborhoods.
Because of an increase in attacks and anti-Semitic behavior inside New York City. And we see it growing, but we don't see, you know, the mayor. We don't see Mayor Adams doing anything about that. We're not seeing action being taken to stop this. And instead, we're seeing the exact opposite. And that very much concerns me, because I think we're seeing that across the board in the United States. And that's a terrible sign.
Somehow, we always find an excuse to leave Jews off the list of targeted communities or communities that are somehow worthy of protection. Right now, an Orthodox Jew, even before the most recent wave, which has probably pushed up the number several times higher, a Orthodox Jew, even in 2019, was three times more likely to be the victim of a hate crime than any other targeted group. Name the group, LGBTQ, Black, Muslim, whatever you want, the Jews were three times more likely to be targeted. And yet you hear now from people of color less than 100 years out from the Holocaust. And you hear allies on the left and advocates for the quote unquote people of color claiming the Jews have white privilege. Jews were exterminated across Europe because they weren't white. That's where anti-Semitism comes from. They're not white people. And, you know, now we have a situation where people who were expelled by Syrian Arabs, the Syrian refugees living in Deal, New Jersey, because they're Jews, they supposedly have white privilege, whereas the families that persecuted them and threw them out are people of color when they come over here because they're Arab. Like, that doesn't even begin to make sense. It doesn't even begin to have a logic.
No, it doesn't.
And last week, you had the White House actually did a United Against Hate summit. And they didn't have a single representative of any of the Haredi, Hasidic Orthodox, or if you want to use the pejorative term, ultra-Orthodox communities. Not a single representative. And in fact, there's a guy who's a Hasidic reporter for a Hasidic news outlet that has a hard pass as part of the press corps at the White House. He couldn't get them to acknowledge his RSVP, and he would not let his crew could not get in to this United Against Hate event. The only Orthodox people they had there were modern Orthodox who don't have, you know, they're not visibly Orthodox. They're not targeted for their looks the way their Hasidic brethren are.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because a lot of people that are listening may not realize this. You know, they will think like, oh, but there was representation at the White House. No, there wasn't, because we've seen the targeted attacks in New York City on videos over and over and over again that are being released, where you have a Hasidic Jewish man walking down the street, or a young person, you know, walking down the street and being targeted. Now, I'm going to ask you this question, and it's not to, you know, it's not, this is, I don't want it to come across as like just one group, but we have seen the rise in the Hebrew Israelites group, which is very radical, and, you know, African-American or Black groups. We've seen that. We've also seen in our own, I would say within our lawmakers and in our Congress, we've seen, you know, Rashida Tlaib as well as others make these very, I would say, anti-Semitic remarks publicly and really not be chastised for them the way that they should be. And, you know, and also try to make it an Israel thing, not just a Jewish thing, although I think it is anti-Semitic all the way around. And there's no excuse for it. I think they just try to use that as an excuse to get away with it. But do you think that because it has become just kind of the nomenclature of what some lawmakers are saying right now, that this has become just kind of accepted in certain communities? Like, because, you know, Rashida Tlaib says this or so-and-so says that, then it's just kind of like, okay, well, you know, that's just the way things are, and we're not gonna push it.
Well, part of the unique nature of anti-Semitic bigotry is that it always tries to find a way to make itself palatable. As Lord Rabbi Dr. Jonathan Sacks, the former chief rabbi of the United Kingdom, said before his passing, that most anti-Semites, it's characteristic of anti-Semitism, that anti-Semites don't imagine themselves to actually be anti-Semites. And he also said, you know, go trace it through history. And hundreds of years ago, it was openly about the Jewish religion. It was, we hate the Jews because of their religion. They killed our God, who knows what. But then when that became no longer palatable thanks to the Enlightenment, that's how they invented anti-Semitism. We don't hate the Jews because of their religion. We hate them because of their inferior ethnicity. Well, today, neither religious nor ethnic bigotry is acceptable. Ah, but to hate a country and to claim that this country is the source of all evil in the Middle East, that's what we're going to do. We're going to target that country. Now, if you actually look at what's going on the ground, Israel is the only country in the Middle East where Arab people can vote in free and fair elections. So where is this apartheid when you have Arab people on the Supreme Court, in the government, in the Knesset, the parliament, in the media, winning reality show contests, which means that Israeli Jews are voting for them, by the way. You know, the entire society is very much built on not the model of the surrounding Arab states. Every one of the surrounding Arab states actually did participate in ethnic cleansing of Jews since 1948. Most of those refugees ended up in Israel. So you have to think about how morally repugnant it is to accuse the refugees of ethnic cleansing of being the perpetrators when the Arab population is actually five times what it was in 1948 in Israel and in the West Bank and in Gaza. Israel's the only place where you've got Jews and Arabs in the government and the Supreme Court in the world. So when you hear Rashida Tlaib calling that one the apartheid state, you know you're listening to a racist.
That's absolutely true. What do you think about the Israel-Palestine two-state solution that's being proposed?
I don't think either the Arabs or the Israelis think that this is a good idea right now. Because Israel already withdrew from Gaza. As a result of that withdrawal, the Gazans chose a genocidal terror organization to lead them, which actually has genocide of the Jews in its charter. And Israel is blamed, not Egypt, by the way, even though Israel only controls two sides of the border, the third being the Mediterranean. Okay, fine. We'll blame them for the embargo, too, on the Mediterranean shipping because they would bring in weapons. But what about Egypt? No, we don't blame Egypt for making it a quote-unquote big jail. Even though Israel is importing foodstuffs every day and is allowing people out who have valid work permits, we're being told it's a big jail because Hamas terrorists are not allowed access to Jews in Israel to slaughter as per their charter. And that, we are told, is evil because it's Jewish lives they're trying to protect. I mean, that's really the only thing about it. It's obviously anti-Semitic. Because in any other situation, you look at conflicts anywhere around the world, in this situation, anywhere else, Gaza would be a parking lot. So in this situation, to claim that the West Bank is somehow going to become another Palestinian state and that one is going to be all peace and roses, it's insanity.
So I think you would agree with me. Like, how did you feel about the work that was being done by Jared Kushner, President Trump, with the Abraham Peace Accords?
You know, it was presenting the other side, here's an opportunity for you to have a Palestinian state, so everything is laid out for you. You want to take it or not? And the message back from the Palestinian Authority was immediate. And this is a Palestinian Authority that would rather be rewarding with financial rewards to the terrorists and their families every act of terrorism committed against a Jewish civilian. The Taylor Force Act exists because an American military vet named Taylor Force went to visit Israel and got murdered because somebody thought he was a Jew.
Right. And I think I remember this saying, and I'm sure you know it, Rabbi, but Golda Meir said, when a Palestinian mother loves her child more than she hates Jews, then we'll have peace. Am I right in that or am I wrong? I think
I believe
never
she said it about
that.
The Arabs. You see, the thing is, she also pointed out that she herself is Palestinian. Think about this for a minute. A Palestinian is not defined by what it is. It can be anybody who lived in British Mandatory Palestine, 1917 to 1948. They can be Bedouin. They can be Druze. They can be Arab Muslim. They can be Arab Christian. The one thing they can't be is Jews. The majority of Jerusalem's population was comprised of Jews before there was such a thing as Zionism. Had nothing to do with Zionism, only the fact everybody on earth knows what the promised land is referring to, where it is, and who was being spoken to. And yet they want to claim that there's such a thing as an indigenous Palestinian who is not Jews. It's only defined by what it excludes. Now, that only sounds like a racist definition of peoplehood, because it is.
Gosh, that's why I talk to you, Rabbi. It's just such logic. It makes such sense. How do you feel? And before I let you go, I really want to touch on this. The Iran nuclear deal. Why do you think President Biden is so desperate, and his administration for this, much like the Obama administration was, so desperate to renew this failed JCPOA that I believe has so many flaws in it, that is just going to rush Iran towards a nuclear deal, towards nuclear capabilities, then hinder it? Why do you think they're so desperate for that?
You know, the left in Israel kind of demonstrated this, that there is a problem when people believe the world is comprised of just rational people who will sing kumbaya if they're merely given an education and an opportunity. This has been proven false time after time after time. There are bad people in the world right now. And you got to recognize that not everybody loves you and not everybody will sit down and make nicey. And, you know, the Oslo Accords in Israel rehabilitated Arafat, the terrorist, who had murdered Jews just on a whim, just for pleasure. He took Leon Klinghoffer, who was on a boat in a wheelchair, and threw him into the water to his death. This is Yasser Arafat, and this is his people. And these are the people we're supposed to expect to run the Palestinian Authority. Well, no wonder the Palestinian Authority is today rewarding financial rewards of terrorism. And now the Fatah faction, the Palestinian Liberation Organization faction, is openly participating in acts of terror, which is just, you know, this is a relatively recent development. They're openly now participating in acts of terror. This is exactly what the Iranians are. You have the Israelis shouting and screaming because they know every current nuclear power on Earth is a rational thinker who thinks about the consequences of his action in Earth terms, meaning to say that the Soviet Union never dropped nukes on Western Europe because they knew the United States would respond and a whole lot of Russians and a whole lot of Americans, and everybody else would die. Well, the Iranians don't think that way. The Iranians are looking forward to dropping nukes on Israel. The Israelis are very freaked out about this nuclear deal because they see it as tremendously dangerous to their very lives. They've had nukes, unofficially, off the record, for a very long time, according to everything we know, and yet they never use them because they're rational actors. The Iranians are religious actors. They're not rational actors. They repress their own people. That's going on right now with protests by women who don't want to wear a hijab being beaten in the streets and imprisoned and even beaten to death for their objection to it, but simply because they want to have their own liberty. So that's the Iranians for you. And the Saudi Arabians and the UAE and every other rational actor in the Middle East is also screaming bloody murder. So it's amazing that the Biden administration, they really need to wake up from this kumbaya dream. The Iranians are not prepared to sit around and trade flowers with us. That's not what they're after. They're after nuclear weapons because they want to use them.
And because they want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, which is what they tweet and say openly all the time.
Right. I mean, censored off of Twitter. Being censored off of Twitter is reserved for truly hateful people like Donald Trump and libs
like
of TikTok. But the Ayatollah, he gets to have his Twitter account because all he talks about is how he wants to slaughter the Jews in Israel.
It's just such an upside down world. Okay, I'm going to make this, I promise you, my final question. Although I want to keep you forever. I wish I could just talk to you forever. I feel like I learned so much from you. Every time I hear you, I read your work or I talk to you, I think you're just such a brilliant, brilliant man. Give us some advice as a rabbi. It is. It is.
I'm but, so sure about that.
You know, as a spiritual leader, you know, we see our nation struggling right now. I talk to people. They're so worried. They're worried about their future. They're worried about what they're seeing in their schools. They're just worried about everything. I don't want to say there's a sense of hopelessness because I think people believe that it could get better. But what advice do you want to give or what advice would you give to somebody who feels like, you know, I don't know what to do. I feel like everything's unraveling around us. Are we ever going to get back to where we were? Will our nation ever get back to a point where we can start building together and not be so divisive with one another?
Well, the first thing I think people need to realize, and it's interesting, you know, we are right now, the Jewish community is in the High Holy Day season. Between Rosh Hashanah, the day of judgment, and Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and there's a period in between there where we're really engaged in self-reflection. Our New Year's is not a Dick Clark holiday, descending ball, party in the street, bands performing. It's a very serious day when we say the entire world is being judged today. And yet we're dressed to our best and we're enjoying special foods and sitting down with our family. You know, how does those even work together? Well, the answer is, you know, we recognize that God is judging us all and looking down on us all, but also expecting better of us and expecting us to turn over a new leaf. And maybe we have an opportunity here to do better in the year ahead and to make ourselves better. So you start inwardly. And one of the things that the Mishnah teaches us about, you know, why does the Bible tell us that Adam and Eve were created as a first couple? There was literally one human being and the entire world was created to serve him. Because every person has to view the world that way. This world was created because God wants to deliver to you exactly what you need in your life, that you should make the best choices and live your best life. So when you feel that, it's a very empowering message. You're worth something. Now, it's scary, too. It's a big responsibility. What am I going to do with the whole world at my footsteps? But at the same time, it's that empowering message that God is going to take care of you and give you the best of what you need. And then you can work on expanding out to the community. It gives you, by the way, a little bit more of a backbone. I get to say, you know, like I'm always being told that what we say is courageous and bold, Coalition for Jewish Values. We're very out in front and we're presenting these messages. But I have thousands of rabbis looking over my shoulder and they're all telling me you're saying the right thing. So if that's the case, I know I'm doing good, you know? So if you find a community where you're backed, where you feel like, oh, we're making a better name for our community, then you expand out from there and you work. And, you know, this most of the country does not support an agenda where boys are told to be girls and girls are told to be boys. That's simply not who we are
Thank
as a
God.
People. And we want something better. And I think actually when people are actually told the truth of what it means to be pro-life and pro-choice, they suddenly realize that when they claim they were told that pro-life means that you can never stop a pregnancy ever, even if mom is going to die. And nobody on a legislative level wants to do that. On the contrary, the real debate in society right now is whether or not a baby born after an unsuccessful abortion where they didn't manage to kill the baby, whether that baby deserves medical care or should be left to die on the table. If that's the two options, 100%. Most people immediately say they're going to be pro-life. And society is absolutely being dragged in a direction that if we actually think about it, we don't want to go. So we have an option here. We have a way to save the society just by letting people know what's really going on and comparing that and contrasting that to what they hear on CNN.
Wow. Thank you so much, Rabbi. Have a blessed Yom Kippur. And for everyone else out there that's listening, for you too. I mean, I think all of us can just take a moment and reflect in ourselves, whether we're Jewish or whether we're Christian or whether we're Buddhist or who whatever we are, whatever we believe. I think that's a great lesson, to take a moment to look inside ourselves, to realize that we are important, that our life is important, that God has given us purpose, and that all we really need to do is kind of reflect inwardly about ourselves and make a promise that we're going to change for the better. I mean, that's what we're here for. We're not perfect. We're not perfect. Although you're pretty close, Rabbi. I'm going to give you that.
I can tell you that's not true. And even better, I can let you talk to my wife.
Yeah, exactly. I'll talk to her. I'll give her a talk.
She'll give you a talk. You don't know my imperfections. My wonderful wife is way more perfect than I am, is, you know.
Oh, you get huge bonus points for that, Rabbi. Huge bonus points. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. I hope you come back. I really, really enjoy our conversations.
Thank you so much.
Remember, we can all take a lesson from Yom Kippur. We can look inside, reflect in ourselves, realize what we need to do to gain a better perspective, to live a better life, and to help one another. I mean, look, we have an election coming up in November. 2024 is around the corner. I have a lot of hope that we're going to turn our nation back into the right direction. That's what we do as Americans. Thank you so much for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. Follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carter DC and on Instagram at S Carter DC. God bless you. God bless the rabbi. God bless our nation. And God bless the great state of Texas.
This week on the Federalist Radio Hour, like, there was this premise, and it was, I think, in some ways correct, especially during the second wave of the feminist movement, that there needed to be correctives. But that was predicated on this idea that there were essential sort of sex differences. And now we're actually even... I'm Emily Jashinsky of The Federalist. Subscribe to The Federalist on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.